What is up, you Barbary horses? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. This week we are back with So You're Going to See Shakespeare for the Month. The idea of these episodes is that it's one that you'll listen to when you are in transit to a Shakespearean production so that we can prepare you to be the best little audience member that you can be.
An audio version of the dramaturgical notes, if you will.
So, hopefully, you will enjoy this episode as you head out to see Othello.
Here we go.
The first thing that we need to cover before we get into this episode is a quick synopsis of the play so that you are at least somewhat familiar with the story. Dan, why don't you kick us off?
Sweet. We begin with Rodrigo, who is a Venetian, asking his friend and fellow soldier Iago why he hasn't told him about the secret elopement between Desdemona, who happens to be the object of Rodrigo's affection, and Othello, a Moorish general. Iago hates Othello and convinces Rodrigo to wake Brabantio, who is Desdemona's father, to let him know about the elopement, while Iago himself rushes to Othello to warn him that Brabantio is coming.
So then Brabantio gets up, he's all riled up, and he shows up at Othello's place to pretty much demand his head with pitchforks and torches. But at that moment, word comes through that there's a bit of a national security crisis going down, and Othello, being the general, is summoned to go to the Duke to figure out how they are going to defend against what is a Turkish an assault by the Turkish Navy, and Brabantio is still pretty displeased, so he comes along.
That assault is the opposite of Turkish delight, I believe.
Turkish destruction.
At the Duke's, Othello defends his marriage to Desdemona and convinces the Duke that it is love and not any sort of witchcraft, and they believe him, which clears Othello of any sort of wrongdoing. Brabantio does get the last word, however, when he tells Othello that Desdemona will betray her new husband the same way that she has betrayed him, her father.
The joke was Turkish despair. Turkish despair was the joke.
There it is.
Othello kind of nods at Brabantio, and then he ships off to Cyprus to defend Venice against these Turks, and in a somewhat unusual turn, he takes along his wife, Desdemona, and also Iago's wife, Amelia, so that Amelia can wait on Desdemona. When they show up and are ready to go, they discover that the Turkish fleet has been smashed by a storm, so they skip the actual battle part and just go straight to the celebration.
Good kind of battle. During the celebration, Iago convinces Rodrigo to fight Michael Cassio. Othello breaks up the scuffle and blames Cassio and strips him of his rank and titles. Cassio, who may have had one or too many to drink, is beside himself, and Iago tells him to go to Desdemona to put in a good word for him with Othello.
Iago then plays the other side of the coin again and goes to Othello and says that he has a sneaking suspicion that Desdemona is fooling around with Cassio, so he plants that seed. Around this time, Amelia finds a handkerchief that Desdemona dropped, and that handkerchief was actually Othello's first gift to her. Amelia kind of pockets the handkerchief and then gives it to Iago, who has been asking her to steal it for a dog's age.
Iago then plants the handkerchief at Michael Cassio's place and reminds Othello, hey, just so you know, I think Cassio and Desdemona, they might just be doing the Hibs. I think that's a possibility. Iago stirs the pot further by chatting with Cassio about a local courtesan named Bianca that he's sleeping with just out of Othello's earshot, but in such a way that Othello thinks Cassio is talking about Desdemona. He is devastated.
Meanwhile, in our original plot, Rodrigo is still angry that Iago hasn't made any progress in breaking up, hasn't made any concrete progress in breaking up Desdemona and Othello and making Desdemona fall in love with him, Rodrigo. So Iago says, all right, you want to jumpstart this? Go ahead and kill Cassio. Rodrigo, jumps Cassio in an alley, basically. And during the scuffle, Iago, who is like kind of loitering, jumps in out of a shadow and stabs Cassio as well without revealing that it's him.
Right.
He then basically runs around the corner while a mob is coming in to break up this scuffle, kind of ingratiates himself into the mob so no one knows he was involved. And then when Rodrigo's about to reveal that Iago was the one that told him to kill Cassio, Iago just goes ahead and snuffs him out, stabs him right there, so that Rodrigo won't talk.
Meanwhile, in less exciting news, Othello confronts Desdemona and she can't produce a handkerchief, so he strangles her to death. A crowd, including Iago and Emilia, show up. When Othello mentions the handkerchief, Emilia realizes what has happened and reveals Iago's plot. Iago, in return, promptly kills her.
Seems to be a recurring bit for Iago in terms of dealing with his problems. Othello now realizes that Desdemona was innocent, so he stabs Iago, but he doesn't kill him because he wants Iago to have to live with himself. Iago and Othello are apprehended by the police for the murders of Rodrigo and Emilia and Desdemona.
But
before he can be taken away, Othello puts a button on the whole thing and just goes ahead and kills himself. And that is Othello. Now that you know basically what you'll be watching, we're going to take a few minutes here to talk about where Othello falls in Shakespeare's personal timeline and what was happening in the world when it was written. Daniel.
Yes. So the first recorded performance of Othello would be on November 1st, 1604. This performance took place at Whitehall, which was the main residence of English monarchs for the duration of Shakespeare's life. Interestingly, 1603 is when Elizabeth dies, so this is in the early phase of King James's reign. So we're starting to see, I think that reveals itself in that Shakespeare is trying out, he tries out a whole bunch of things in this play, basically trying to test out to see, what do you like, King James? What's the sort of play that you like? And this certainly has a lot to do, this is definitely the work of someone who is trying to impress his new boss.
His new boss, right. Speaking of his new boss, one of the things that happened in August 1600, so several years earlier, was an ambassador for the King of Barbary, which would have been where Othello came from, arrived in England and spent 6 months in London. During that time, Shakespeare's company very likely played for these natives of Barbary, these Moors. So he was very aware of them. He knew of them, and they are very likely the inspiration for this character.
That's interesting. Also in 1604, James the First's pamphlet, A Counterblast to Tobacco, was published.
I love that album.
Right. Also, for the first time, a tax was being levied on tobacco to restrain its use. So this play definitely has the feeling of, you know, if Shakespeare was like a chain smoker and now he can't smoke a cigarette, he's so frustrated he writes Othello.
He's taking it out on
all of
us. I
just want to kill everybody.
Another important note in terms of the reputation various cities had at this time. In this era, Venice was known as the pleasure capital of Europe, especially in a sexual sense. It was kind of known that, you know, what happens in Venice stays in Venice, that all the women there have several partners, all the men there are just getting around. They don't care who anyone's attached to. Everybody's just going at it. So Othello, being not of Venice, but knowing of this reputation, is going to buy all these rumors, all these innuendos, all these leading statements in a way. It'd be as if you were in Vegas and, you know, you're like, oh, God, anything can go here.
Right. And promiscuity isn't as, like, shocking in that world.
It's kind of standard. Yeah. Right.
Like, oh, hey, that's Bianca. She happens to be a whore.
Right.
Oh, yeah, well, of course. Right. She also drives a BMW.
Right.
Also in this year, this is unrelated to Shakespeare, but it's kind of an interesting fact. Kepler's Supernova was first observed.
Another great album.
The thing I think is really cool about this is it was a naked eye supernova. Like, they saw it without, they could just see it with the naked eye. And that didn't happen again until 1987. And that's the last time it's happened since then. So
Holy
this is happening
cow.
Two times ago was the same year that Othello was written. Just a...
So there you go. That's a window into what was going on in Shakespeare's world when he wrote Othello. This is where we identify what we consider to be the most prominent theme in the play and particular places where you may see it come up in production. Dan has chosen his three favorites.
Yes.
And I'm going to pick my choice of those three for us to dig in on for a few minutes. So, Daniel,
yes.
What are our finalists?
Fantastic. With so many choices to choose from, I had to narrow in on three that I really liked. And I think that you could choose really any one of these three. So I'm excited to see where we go with this. The three choices are honesty, jealousy, and violence. Honesty, jealousy, and violence. Three themes in Othello. What is your favorite one of the three?
I think violence is interesting, but I think jealousy is the one that we should go for. I mean, it's more surface level than I think we usually do in this section, but it's
sure.
Just pouring out of every word of this play. So let's go with jealousy.
Hey, jealousy. Let's talk about it. From the hit album Shakespeare's Supernova.
Supernova in the sky. So, jealousy, obviously, Othello's whole character falls apart because of a jealousy that is instilled in him. You can see a real difference in his character before Iago plants that seed and after.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, that's the simple one.
Right. Also, Desdemona talks about, Emilia asks Desdemona, like, do you think he's a jealous guy? And Desdemona's like, nah, definitely not. Like, the sun sucked that humor out of him, I think is the line that she has.
Wow.
And then late, like, eight lines later, he's like, leaves the stage in a fit of jealousy.
Right.
And Amelia's like, are you sure about that? And Desmond was like, I've never seen this guy before.
Interesting.
So, yeah, Iago definitely has an effect.
Yes. We also have Rodrigo's jealousy of Othello's love with Desdemona.
Yep.
And how that inspires him to stab a guy in an alley.
Yeah. Right.
We have, I mean, pretty much everyone in this play, literally everyone in this play other than Desdemona, I suppose. All the major players are motivated by jealousy. Iago is jealous of Othello's rank. Cassio,
right.
I would say, also is in a way jealous. I mean, he has his title stripped, so he was fine before that. But, you know, everybody wants something that they can't have.
Right.
Iago
is jealous too of Cassio because he gets the promotion.
Right.
And Iago's like, this should have been me.
Mm-hmm.
And that some people, you know, there's that whole like Iago is example of motiveless malice. And to me, that's not supported by the text because he lists off several motives for why he has a lot of malice.
Well,
one of which is jealousy that like I should have been the guy.
Yeah. But he also, I think that comes from the fact that he's just like a buffet line of motivations instead of all of other Shakespeare's other arch villains who have a very specific motive. Iago's just like a shotgun blast of motives why he's doing these things. I think Iago is super overrated. I don't know if this is the right section for that.
Well, we'll see, I guess, in the next section, but perhaps.
Iago is jealous of all of the other good villains in Shakespeare, like Richard III and Edmund and Philip the Bastard.
Brabantio. Could you argue that Brabantio is jealous in a Freudian sense that his daughter is marrying, that she betrays him and for another man?
I think that's interesting, yes, that she is willing to risk her relationship with her father
right
for this love. I think there are definitely places to find Amelia's jealousy of Desdemona.
Sure.
100%. Even though I think Amelia comes around to regret that later, but there are some actions that she probably did in some form of, you know, who's it in Henry VI Part 2? Gloucester's wife, I can't remember, who is driven by that jealousy that she's not the top girl. Anyways,
oh yeah.
All right, so jealousy. I mean, you cannot miss it. It will be smacking you in the face for 2 hours as you go to see Othello. In this section of the show, we choose which non-title characters we would most want to play in this piece and explain why in 2 minutes or less. I won the coin flip before the show.
Come
on. And I've elected to go first, unsurprisingly. So as I guess this will be where I get to gloss over the fact that I think Iago is completely overrated as an antagonist. So I'm going to pass on Iago. I actually think there's more interesting things to mine out of Emilia in this play.
I'm so angry.
Was that yours?
Yes.
Well, great minds. Mediocre minds. What I like about Emilia is that it's kind of an expansion, I feel like, of Lady Anne from Richard III.
Okay.
That Lady Anne has, you know, Lady Anne has all these, Lady Anne knows her husband. She knows what she's in for. She knows that he's a monster and she knows she's stuck with him and she's kind of trapped in the society that she lives in. Because what can Lady Anne do? There's nothing she can do.
Sure.
And Amelia's in the same boat here, that her and Iago's marriage is, I would argue, loveless at this point. We have Iago still gets jealous of thinking that's, you know, there's that one of his shotgun motivations is that he thinks Othello has slept with Amelia. I don't buy it. But I think Amelia has to deal with that, with her relationship with Othello, who I don't think she loves. Also, she has one of the most interesting lines in this play, which is the one time that she lies to Desdemona. Yeah. Desdemona says, where should I lose that handkerchief, Amelia? And Amelia has, I know not, madam.
Right.
And then five empty beats. That is when Amelia kills Desdemona, basically.
Right.
With those five syllables and those five empty beats. Yeah. And I think there is a lot of action to mine there. So I would recommend Amelia.
I think that's a great answer. So at this point, with Amelia off the board, and unfortunately, due to the nature of the question, I'm not available to play Othello, which is a loss because I think I could really do that well.
Well.
That's going to put me, I guess I will happily take Iago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Best available on Mel Kiper's big board.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting character. I do think he's got a lot going on. We touched on the idea of where does this malice come from. I would disagree with what you just said about it being a loveless marriage, because I think Amelia is still very much, I mean, the only way that she can lie to Desdemona and do the whole thing with the handkerchief is if she loves or wants to love or wants to be loved by Iago.
Mm.
Otherwise, it becomes about Amelia getting back at Desdemona for something.
It's a fear of Iago or trying to placate Iago.
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe, but I think it's also interesting if it's like, I can do this for you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying you, it can't. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do love something about Iago that I absolutely adore. And this, actually, it's interesting if you compare Amelia to Lady Anne, the comparison from Iago to Richard III is how much he talks to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And how much he gets to be like, now here's what I'm going to do next. And you're going to love it. I'm going to make you love it.
Mm.
Which is a really interesting road to go down. So I do think there's a lot to play with. The more I think about it, I'm elated that I've caught Iago here on the flip side of the coin.
On
lost.
The turn.
You know, I was going to go with Amelia, but now I'm pumped to play Iago, and I shall play it. I will play it.
Well, all you overrated folks can stick together. So there you go. There are recommended roles for Othello. This is the section of the show where we pull our favorite phrase from the play and talk through it so that you can nod smugly and knowingly when you hear it in the play. The line we chose from Othello is, she loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them, from Act 1, Scene 3. Let's turn it over to Dan to hear the phrase in context.
Her father loved me, oft invited me, still questioned me the story of my life from year to year, the battles, sieges, fortunes that I have passed. I ran it through, even from my boyish days, to the very moment that he bade me tell it, wherein I spake of most disastrous chances, of moving accidents by flood and field, of hairbreadth scapes in the imminent deadly breach, of being taken by the insolent foe and sold to slavery, of my redemption thence, importance in my travelous history, wherein of antres vast and deserts idle, rough quarries, rocks, and hills whose heads touch heaven, it was my hint to speak. This to hear would Desdemona seriously incline, but still the house affairs would draw her thence, which ever as she could with haste dispatch she'd come again, and with a greedy ear devour up my discourse. I did consent, and often did beguile her of her tears when I did speak of some distressful stroke that my youth suffered. My story being done, she gave me for my pains a world of sighs, and bade me, if I had a friend that loved her, I should but teach him how to tell my story, and that would woo her. Upon this hint I spake. She loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them. This only is the witchcraft I have used.
Thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome. So
that is, she loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them. So, for a little context here, as we mentioned in the synopsis at the top of the show, This is after Brabantio has gone to Othello's house, basically tried to fist fight him. They go to the Duke. They sort out their national defense plan. And then Othello is accused of the only way that he could have seduced Desdemona is, naturally, witchcraft. So Othello has this whole monologue explaining how he and Desdemona fell in love, which is why you have that button at the end of this saying the only witchcraft is that we had this connection.
Right.
It is important to note that generally Othello is going to be in his 40s and Desdemona's probably going to be like 16.
Right.
So that is, so we not only have the racial element here, which in 1604 is probably not the most progressive, especially relative to current standards. But we also have this gigantic age difference that they're sorting through. So all these other people are saying, not only are you a Moor, what does a 16-year-old see in you? And it's for him, it's that he has lived this whole life and she just can't get enough of hearing about it.
Right. Yeah, because it's not just the age difference. It's also the amount of experience inside of those years that he didn't have. He's not just like, I'm 40, but I haven't done anything. He's lived a huge life and has all of these stories to tell.
He's seen the world.
And
passed all of these dangers, all the dangers I have passed.
Right.
But it really is that line is a wonderful moment of like, it's kind of any relationship when everyone else is like, this is a mistake, you know? And it's like, no, you don't understand what we have.
Right.
Right. And
this should be like the calling card for anyone out there and anyone out there who feels like damaged goods, which is like, listen, I got some stuff.
Right.
But you know what? She loves me for them. And I love her for loving me for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The calling card of damaged goods. And we know the island of misfit toys that is out there. You bard flies. You are a bunch of damaged goods. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume.
Why are you looking at me when you said that? What was that about?
You know exactly. Jelly shooting squirt gun over there.
Nice. I'm more of a Charlie in the Box.
Well, I'm Herbie the Dentist. So nice. The other line that is wonderful in this monologue that we almost made the line from the show is, what does he say about a world of sighs?
She gave me for my pains a world of sighs.
That's S-I-G-H-S, like... Oh, it's the Shakespearean way to refer to a sympathetic ear.
Right.
And I think that's a great, that could be a word of the week, an everyday Shakes at a later, where it's like, that person has a world of, they're just, you just sit down and you bitch and they are just a sympathetic ear. They'll listen and they'll provide feedback and they just have a world of sighs to give.
Yeah. And I like, what I like about that image too is that the, you know, the fact that you had to spell it out literally for the listener tells you that he gave her a world of size.
With his, in terms S-I- of what he had lived.
S-I-Z-E. Right. And that he broadened the spectrum of her world as she knew it with all of these stories. I think the other thing that really appeals to me about this line is that it is the climax of a storyteller telling a story about how good he is at storytelling.
Right.
Which is a real challenge.
Yeah. Like, well, it's even earlier in this scene, Othello mentions that the reason he was telling all these stories that Desdemona got to hear is that Brabantio kept calling him over to tell stories about right. what he had seen.
Right.
And so Othello's saying, like, oh, really? You can't believe that your daughter fell for me? Why did you keep calling me?
Right.
You couldn't get enough of me. Right. So, of course, your daughter was into it.
You brought me into your home. I happened to seduce your daughter. My bad.
Well,
but I did it with stories.
Right.
It wasn't witchcraft. I do also like talking about Scansion really quickly. It's interesting that, you know, this is the power of where you put the word in the line, because Shakespeare easily could have gone with, this is the only witchcraft I have used. Mm-hmm. And instead goes with, this only is the witchcraft I have used.
It punches out, yeah.
100%. And it's, you know, that's the sort of thing where it's like, that's not a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is it.
Right.
You know.
I'm just dope as hell.
And I will tell you one thing. It is a witchcraft. he concedes that it's a witchcraft in right. that sentence.
Right.
But it's the witchcraft of storytelling, which is fun. There's a sort of... is an odd parallel. I'd be interested in matching this up with something from Prospero, where he talks about his art
and magic. Yeah, and,
you know, it's like this has an incantation quality to it, which I think is wonderful. I remember very vividly going to see a missionary come to speak at my church as like a 7-year-old, and it was just Father Beck. If you're out there listening to the pod, what up, Father Beck? Friend of the pod. But he just was like this missionary. He's like, yeah, I've been traveling around Africa and through South America, and I'm here in Hampton, New Hampshire for a week, and just told like parables. Huh. And it was like riveting. And here I am 26 years ago. And of course, I was just spellbound by these stories, which is an interesting, when you've seen the world, and then your job becomes to go around and tell people about the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty compelling stuff.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's the line for you to snuggle up with your plus one for the evening. She loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them. Enjoy that one, you island of misfit toys. Here we will highlight the biggest practical challenge to the director in this play and share a few ideas on how it has been solved in the past. For Othello, we think the biggest challenge is the stage direction dies from Act 5, Scene 2. So this requires a little more context. As we all know, Othello either strangles or... pillow faces Desdemona to death.
Smothers, perhaps?
Smothers, pillow, yes, right, of course.
As opposed to Smuckers, of course, which is not his jam.
Get out of town, the podcast is over. So Othello kills Desdemona, then Emilia comes in, they have a whole scene, and then Desdemona has like 3 more lines and dies.
Right.
So the problem here, for those of you playing along at home, is that how do you strangle someone? They kind of lay there for, I'm looking at it now, it's like 2 or 3 pages.
Yeah.
And then it's
two or
like,
3 Arden pages, which is like 6 lines.
And then Desdemona has like 2 lines and then dies.
Yeah.
It's not how strangling works, Bill.
I think what we're talking about, this is going to be, and I think this gets back to, this is early King James Shakespeare.
Okay.
Because we all know, if you've been listening to the podcast, and I know that we have been, that James was into some weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not least of which is witchcraft, numerology, the dark side of magic. So this idea, like Desdemona is almost like a zombie. In this moment, I think that James would get off on that.
Okay.
It's not like she didn't die. Like, she died and then comes back to life for a minute and then, like, they kill her again.
Interesting. And this also has, I mean, there are parallels of other Shakespeare characters doing this, most notably, oh, damn it, what's his face in King John, the little prince who falls out of the window?
Arthur?
Ah, yes, Arthur. So Arthur basically takes a dive out of a window.
More or less.
Just goes splat, then has six lines, and then dies. So it's like, how... Yeah. When we get to, so you're going to see King John, spoiler alert, that's going to be the problem for that play. Yeah. Dan, how have you seen this done in productions?
Honestly, I've only seen Othello done once. And unless we're counting the scene from Stage Beauty, the hit movie, which they do show this.
I have not seen that.
Are you kidding?
No, I don't even know what that is.
We're going to watch that this week.
Okay.
It's really great. It's really great. It features the line, it features one of my favorite lines, a woman playing a woman, what's the trick in that?
That actually sounds familiar.
Yeah, David Kaye talks about it. Friend of the pod, David Kaye. What's up? I believe in you and H. Go Cats. But yeah, so I've only seen this done once. I don't remember what they did. It was years ago. I believe it was fairly traditional. I do think it should be shocking. Mm-hmm. I think it's the moment of the audience is mourning for Desdemona. How could he have killed her? Mm-hmm. We love her. Mm-hmm. How could she be dead? Oh my God, she's alive! Oh God, she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think what they do in the movie, which I love, is like it's all in the hand. Like the hand is where. Like, Desdemona dies, and then the hand sort of, like, cascades off the side of this settee.
Okay.
Very, very melodramatic.
Stylized, yeah.
100% stylized. And then you see her, like, jolt back to life, and it creates a moment of, like, which is, you know, I think what it was intended to do.
Yeah, it's as if someone just gave her CPR, like, on the beach, and she just, like, spit up ocean water, and she just, like, sits up.
Yeah.
Except, again, that's not how... strangling works.
Right.
But I do think I have no solutions for this. I think that you do kind of just have to lean into, I like your zombie interpretation, or just like the splash of cold water, but then she just rolls over and dies.
Well, because she doesn't, I mean, I don't think she truly, I mean, to go back to the Arthur bit, there have been stories about people who have fallen out of buildings, hit the ground, stood up, and walked like 8 feet.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And then
yeah.
Collapse, and like every bone in their body is broken.
Right, because just like, their insides are destroyed.
It's just the human will to live.
Yeah.
And then it's like, nope.
Nope.
Nope. User fail.
Like blue screen, and that's it. So.
Right. I think, I do think the only way, and it's sort of very on brand for this podcast, the only way to make this work is to lean unapologetically into it and mm-hmm. just say, hey, you know what? She's alive for a minute.
How about some witchcraft?
Just to make life awful for Othello.
Exactly.
And what if, you know, what if he was a witch this whole time? What if he was
Twist!
A twist.
He is actually the third, he's that third witch in
right?
Macker's.
Hecate is Othello.
Whoa!
Conspiracy
on the next
theory,
fan
episode.
Theory episode.
So, yeah, that's what
there
I would do.
There you go. Keep an eye out for it. Keep an eye out for this when you go to see this production and let us know how they handle it. Yeah, that's going to do it for us this week. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us in iTunes so we can keep bringing Shakespeare to your headphones on a weekly basis. If you have questions or comments you'd like to send our way, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at noholdsbarredcast, or you can Facebook us at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So, until next time, I'm Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Bolliere.
Myself will straight aboard. And to the state,
this heavy act with heavy heart relate.
Adieu, 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 adieu.